The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. I'm Jen Coburn and I'm delighted you could join us this evening. Now, tonight we are hopefully lowering the shoulders and taking a breath. Something that is often very hard as parents and also as children. Busy lives and the last crazy few COVID years have brought mental well-being to the forefront for lots of families and is something many of us are learning about or wanting to work on. So when I heard about Becky and the work she does with young people teaching them yoga and mindfulness in Hertfordshire, I really wanted to find out more. And I'm so pleased she's here to talk to us now. Hello, Becky.
Hi, Jen. Nice to be here.
Oh, thank you so much for joining us. So I suppose, Becky, why don't you just start by telling us in a nutshell what you do?
So I run Becky's Little Yogis, and it's to help children's overall well-being. I run after school classes under yoga and mindfulness. But now I'm just having to change the name around because I want to incorporate a lot more. So I'm calling them well-being classes. I also do one-to-ones. I did some workshops before, which were successful. So I'm going to start doing them again this summer, which I'm really looking forward to.
Amazing. So wellness for children basically is your bag, is your thing.
It's my thing, yes. It's my passion, which I'm trying to turn into a business. If it's something that you would like to do to make a lot of money, then I wouldn't recommend it. If you want to help as many children as you can, then go for it, because it is rewarding in bucket loads. It's incredible. I love it. I feel really lucky. I finally found my why and my purpose after lots of different jobs, office jobs, working with adults, a variety of different career paths. It's definitely where I need to be.
Okay, so tell me about that. So tell me, you're a young mum yourself, are you? Is that right?
Yes, I am. Yeah, so during COVID, I had a lot of time at home, like we all did, with my little boy, who was then two. And there is a really great yoga teacher on YouTube, Adrian, Yoga with Adrian. And we started doing a lot of yoga together, me and my little boy. And I fell in love with it again after not doing it for some years. Life gets in the way and you just forget doing the things you love. They just slip your mind sometimes. But it was really great having that time to get back into it. And watching my little boy love it, it made me think, oh, why isn't there yoga for children? That'd be a wonderful thing. So I just did a little search and I realised there is yoga for children and there's training courses you can go on. And I applied as soon as I could, as soon as, you know, we were allowed to go places again. I took a course, just was mind blown with it. There's so many different things that we can do in those classes. And then also the other women there, we're all there for the same reason. It was wonderful, really nice to interact with those lovely ladies. And they're all doing a similar thing now as well, where they're from. That's how it started.
So it was born out of something that as a mum you were looking for your two-year-old, or you were enjoying learning about yoga two-year-old, and you have created a business for yourself here in Hertfordshire. So tell me a bit more about what you do at Becky's Little Yogis, because here on The Parents Show we are Hertfordshire based, so we're always keen to learn about how we can maybe get involved in something.
Yes, so I was highly recommend one of the workshops that I do, just so the children can get a taste of it, see what's involved. And if they love it, then the child can have regular one-to-ones with me, usually in the comfort of their own home, because it's their safe space. And they're usually a little bit more relaxed now. I know it's one of those things where they could be distracted at home as well, but if you're in, you know, like a quiet space and you make the place relaxed, it does work. And I also offer it in my home as well, in my garden city, if that is better for the child. And I do maybe five of those a week, which I love, and I really get to know the children. Also, I do the after-school clubs at a few schools in Hertfordshire, but I don't want to do too many because I also want to be able to pick up my son from school when I can.
The mum work-life balance, the juggle is real, as they say.
Yes, absolutely.
So you work with different age groups, and I really want to start to try and understand about what it is with these different age groups that they need when it comes to this wellness and mindfulness and really what you do. So let's maybe talk about the first group of kids that you work with. So you work with two different age groups, I understand. What are those two age groups, Becky?
The age groups are 6 to 9 and then 9 to 13.
So they have probably very different needs, or do you have to approach it differently? Let's talk about the younger age group then. So 6 to 9, how do you do yoga and mindfulness with them?
So with the age of 6 to 9, I have to make it more fun, because if you're a parent out there, you know that their attention span isn't as long as maybe the older child or an adult. So I try and incorporate a lot of fun with it, and I make it more interactive. So I ask them questions. What we do in all the classes, actually, I ask them to close their eyes, and then they raise their hands when I've asked a question. So if I say, does anyone here ever feel lonely sometimes? And then they put their hand up. If all their hands are up, or the majority, I ask them to keep their hands there, but open their eyes. And then they look around and realise, okay, yeah, no, I'm not alone here. And then I start with that. I say, we're never alone in loneliness. And that's quite a nice thing to think about. If you're ever having a moment, think, you know, I'm not the only one out there. I'm not suffering alone. And I think that's important for us adults to remember as well. But with the younger children, I do need to keep it a little bit more lighthearted. So there'll be usually some fun games in our school club. And we do something like musical statues, but with a positive affirmation song instead, which will sometimes we put on and we can all sing along to it. We'll do the alphabet game, where children will say what they're grateful for, but going around in the alphabet circle, or what their name begins with, because some children struggle with the alphabet. So you just have to get a good feel of the class. And it's all so different as well. Sometimes I'll go in with a lesson plan, and I'll end up doing maybe just 10% of what I went in with the idea, because the energy of the children will definitely change from week to week. Some children will have a great week, some of us won't, maybe, or a child is absent, and you just have to adapt to that.
I'm interested to talk about this 6 to 9 year old group, because it's a young age, isn't it, Becky? But is it important that they also address their wellness and mindfulness, like as adults we are starting to learn a bit more about in the last few years? What sort of, I don't know if issues is the right word, but what kind of concerns might you be noticing in a group of 6 to 9 year olds that you think it's important that we are helping them to address?
Yeah, so good question. I think it's more important now than ever, but I do feel like I wish we had this when I was growing up, and I wish all children had this, or have this space, a safe space to talk openly about that, what they're feeling, what they're going through, any pressures that they might be facing. The biggest thing I'm seeing now is the too much screen time, which I know a lot of parents can relate to. It's a nice way for children to have downtime. It's what they enjoy, but there has to be a limit, because you can see that the little brains trying to process all this visual craziness going at them all the time, and they're not taking any time out to just be bored, to be using their imagination. You know, I'm a really big one for using their imagination. I love it when my child comes up to me and says, "Mommy, I'm bored." I just reply, "Good, good, be bored." I'm a single mum, so when he goes to his dad's, he's just the happiest kid in the world, because he gets to play on his tablet, and I don't have one at home, because I do see the downside of it, unfortunately. A few years ago, I was teaching a child, she would have been 6 or 7 years old, and I was addressing the whole class about coming off screens at least an hour before bedtime, because as we know, and it's been proven, that screen time before bed can have massive impact on a child's sleep. This girl's face was in utter shock. She just did not know what to do with herself. And I felt really saddened by it. So we all went around and discussed what we can do for that 1 hour instead. And it would be maybe helping with the house, you know, after dinner, maybe helping with the washing or putting stuff away, drawing, some art, writing, reading, cuddles, meditation, yoga, stretching, a bath, so many different things she could do rather than just, you know, even go for a nice walk. No matter the weather, it's always nice to get out, I think. I'd recommend that if a child doesn't know what to do with themselves. Go for a nice nature walk, listen to the sounds. That really helps regulate, that really helps them with their downtime. I think it's the best answer to most questions, go for a walk.
And that basically is what mindfulness is, isn't it? It's about being more present, being more engaged. Is that correct?
Yeah. Absolutely, and finding mindfulness in everything. So even eating your dinner, we're already looking at what we've got a fork going in our mouth. We're already eyeing up what's going in our mouth next, aren't we, mostly? Like, I know I do. I'm guilty of maybe rushing my food sometimes, but I just need that reminder, slow down, just maybe close your eyes even and, you know, be careful you don't stab the fork in your face. But just to slow down and enjoy the taste of stuff, enjoy the smell, enjoy you have a home-cooked prepared dinner in front of you and feel grateful for that, because not everyone can sit down and eat a dinner and look at the different colours on your plate. Maybe look at the nutritional value as well. So talk about it with your family.
It's about being present. And so for that age group, 6 to 9, that's the major thing you're noticing, getting off tech and being present and how that affects them.
Yeah.
And then for the next age group, 9 to 13, did you say?
Yes.
Now, we're hitting some pre-teens here. This is a whole different arena, is it not?
Yes, and it's my favourite. I love it. I bring me all the pre-teens. I love it. It's just something that you don't forget going through. And I think it's important to talk about what you know. You know, they say, write what you know. Yeah, talk about what you know. And it's just one of those times that usually sticks with a person, doesn't it?
Oh, definitely. It's a confusing time and, you know, not giving anything away. But for me, it was quite a few years ago when the landscape of life was different. But for these preteens, the tech, social life, everything like that. Again, what is it that you are noticing this group are coming to you with that you feel mindfulness and well-being is really important for?
Lack of confidence. Yeah, not really knowing them, what to do with themselves, the comparing already.
Wow.
The outside influence. Yeah. So they're already judging themselves or comparing themselves. You see that, because I've been doing it for almost 4 years now, so I've seen some children grow up really, really quickly. From, you know, from a 6-year-old to a 10-year-old, the change is quite a big difference. And what started off with really like a loving, a happy, carefree child, we're never all carefree, but changing to a preteen that's, you know, judging themselves and struggling with themselves and finding themselves, and that you can see their self-love just diminishing. And it is really sad to see.
And so how does the work you do help that, Becky?
So I'm a massive, massive believer in self-love and boosting confidence. And I give them homework, but I say to them, look, I'm never actually going to check if you do the homework, because if you don't do it, the only person that's going to know is you. But I wouldn't give it to you if it didn't matter. So, you know, let's really try and make an effort with yourself, because you're the only one that can do this. So what I try to do is I get them to look into a mirror in a safe space when they get home and there's no one around, and say the words, I love you, in the mirror. I've watched adults try to do this and cry. They fall apart. They can't get through. You know, it's really, really tough. And I wish I had someone to talk to when I was going through this. You know, your family are there, and there's you know, friends, but you just need that safer, that safe adult that's kind of non-biased and not there to judge, and they just want to be there. They don't have to be there, you know, like our parents, they kind of have to be there, right? So I feel like I like being that for the children, for the teenagers. I like being there for them, and I do genuinely care as well.
So trying to get them to love and accept themselves more, and having a space where they can air, you know, if they're not feeling particularly confident.
We discuss our anxieties, any problems we're having. My favourite subject to talk about is bullying. I know that's really weird, but I do feel like that's my strength. I have this thing where we point a finger. I get them to point a finger at me and just say all the bad stuff. and some of them love it. And some of them, I don't want to say anything bad about you, Becky. I'm like, go on, I can take it. I've got my barrier up. Go on, throw all the bad stuff at me. You know, they're going, you're stupid, you're smelly, you're ugly, and you don't know anything. And I'm there like, that's okay, I can take it. And then at the end, I'll get them to turn their hands upside down and look at the three fingers pointing back at them. And I try to get them to see that when a person is shouting or throwing bad things at you, it's just their insecurities. And it's none of our business. Someone else's opinion of us, none of our business. We don't need to pick it up. And then I do a day, you know, I do a day where, you know, a few bad things have happened and you can see my mood just deteriorating. And I'm going to be stressed with my mum, and I'm not going to be friendly with my neighbour, and my little boy will irritate me more than usual, and I might shout at my dog. But then I'm going to go through that day again, and I'm not going to pick it up because I don't need to. I don't need to carry that. So then I'm going to have a lovely conversation with my mum. I'm going to say hi to my neighbour. I'm going to cuddle my dog, and me and my son are going to have fun, because that's what matters.
It's lessons that you're teaching the young people, but really it's lessons we all could take a big lesson from, isn't it?
It's harder though as we get older. Everything is, you know, it is like learning a new language. We didn't have these tools when we were younger. Someone hurt us, we'd straight away, oh, you know, what's wrong with me? And that is kind of like our human natures, our go-to. We think, oh, how can I improve? And really, you are already as improved as you can be just by being yourself. You're just perfect the way that you are. You're the only you that's here. And the world, and I say the world's better because you're here. And how can we make it kinder? How can we make more people love themselves so that we love ourselves? Yeah, and they love that. All the children, all the ages love talking about this, you know, like helping with the environment, helping strangers, being kinder to family, being kinder to ourselves, being more patient with younger siblings, perhaps. That's a big one. A lot of children talk about their irritations with their siblings. And I always say, oh, I didn't have any, so I don't know your struggles. And I feel really lucky.
What kind of reaction do you get from the kids?
Oh, just, yeah, love. I just get so much love from them. They're just happy to be there. They really are. They want to talk. Children want to talk, and I want to listen. And then we always have time where we do a meditation as well. And when they've got a lot off their chest, when we've done our lovely yoga poses, our stretching, maybe some mindful activities, our deep breathing, we'll do some humming, and then we relax, and they're ready for it. They want to meditate. The older ones can go for a bit longer because the younger ones are maybe a little bit too fidgety. So I say about 5 minutes with them, and then maybe 5 to 10 minutes with the older children. And they can, when I do a visualizing meditation at times. So the older ones seem to grasp that a little bit better.
And then what about the parents? What feedback are you getting from them after their kids have been coming to workshops and classes with you?
Yeah, wonderful. I get a lot of thank yous, which is nice. And a lot of children want to come again. So that's great for me because I get to see them more, and I see them just, you know, improving with their self-love, improving their confidence, you know, coming back, and it's lovely. And yeah, I really love what I do very much, and I really appreciate the feedback from parents, emails and comments and little cards made and drawings. I love all of that, and I keep them all.
Sounds like you really are making a difference to lots of families around Hertfordshire. Is this important, Becky? Like, after school clubs, you know, it could be chess, sport, swimming, you know, there's a thousand options, but actually this is another option, a well-being after school class.
Yeah, yeah.
Should that be being taken as seriously as other clubs for parents when they're looking at options?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm going to say more seriously. I think it's the best option out there, but obviously I only offer it in three different schools because like I said, I want to be there a couple of times a week to pick my son up. But I would really recommend other people doing this, get the training. So what I did, I went on to the Yoga for Children course, and then I did a few separate courses for mindfulness and wellbeing. And I just merged them together because I thought, well, what a lovely idea. Because yoga means union, the mind and the body. So I just thought, well, how can I do more of this? Sometimes I'll get them to put a story or a play on for me, the younger one. All of them love that, but mainly for the younger children. Then they can really use their imagination. And I might say something like, okay, you're going to show me a play, and I'll give them some ideas about the sun sets, or you're in the woods. It's always around nature. And then they love it. They really come alive. And I watch them work as a team as well. And sometimes they have to step in, obviously, but they really enjoy that.
I am so impressed by what you do, and I think it is really important. And as my child grows up, it is going to be something that I keep in my mind as well, that this, the well-being and mental health aspect of childhood is something that we should be really open and talking about rather than just burying away and hiding behind tech. So thank you, Becky, for bringing it to my attention and other people's attention today. If people want to get in touch with you and learn a bit more about maybe how they could work with you or where you run classes, how would they do that?
So for the summer, I'm going to be running workshops for children for two different ages, the 6 to 9 year olds and the 9 to 13 year olds, at a lovely shop in St. Albans called I'm Fine Wellbeing, that is named perfectly. So there's a lovely wellbeing room at the back where we can do our workshops there. And while the grown-ups can have a little wander, peruse.
We know the shop well. I have interviewed them as well. Matt and Amy are fantastic. So it is a wonderful space to go to. And how would they email you or contact you about going to those classes?
So the information is on my website, beckyslittleyogis.com. And you can message me, email, my phone number's on there. I love speaking to people over the phone, so or a text message, WhatsApp. I'm available and I'd love to hear from you.
Wonderful. So beckyslittleyogis.com. Check it out, take a look, and do go and visit Becky if you think this is something that could be wonderful for your child. Thank you so much for your time, and wish you a wonderful summer with all these kids. I'm sure it'll be fun as well as really important. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Take care, Becky. Bye.
Bye.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
I'm Lydia Elcourie. I'm delighted to be joined this evening by June O'Sullivan. And for those of our listeners who don't know, June O'Sullivan, OBE, is the CEO of the London Early Years Foundation, LEYF. June, thank you so much for joining us on The Parents Show.
Always a pleasure.
It is absolutely always lovely to have you back and learn from you and your wise words. So your focus is on early years. So by early years, you mean 0 to 5. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
And now so much of the good work in children's development is done in the early years. Mm. Tell us why it's so important.
So I run 40 nurseries across 12 London boroughs, and we have about 4,000 children and just under 1,000 staff, including 100 apprentices. And our job every day is to provide our children with education and care and support parents to do that between us. We call it the home learning bridge, where you connect with the nursery and home and build that really strong bridge. And I'm very reflective of the fact that children are like a litmus test. You know, they sort of, what's going on for this in society is often demonstrated in children's lives and understanding. And we know that by investing in the early years, you really reap the benefit, and not just emotionally and educationally, but also economically, because there's some really interesting research done by Nobel Prize winning economists, such as James Heckman, who find that if you invest, for example, £1 into the early years generally, the return is about, you know, something like £7. Now, the formulas can be tweaked, you know, by economists, but effectively what you're seeing is that it's a huge benefit. And it's a huge benefit. And the measures are things like an increase in success at school, an increase in success in the workplace, an increase in success in long-term relationships, a reduction in problematic situations like crime, going to prison. Teenage pregnancies are reduced. And that really is driven by three things that we can do well in the early years. One is to support children to manage their emotions. And so one of the things that are very difficult for children to learn, and it takes a lot of emotional energy from them, is to know how to manage their need for immediate benefits or immediate responses. So to be able to delay that. That takes a lot of doing when you're two to learn how to wait and to understand that. And then, of course, for us at LEAF, we're a social enterprise, so we work across areas of disadvantage and poverty, because those are often the children who get excluded from the nursery in the sense that they can either not afford it or there's no nursery of decent quality in their neighbourhood. So we try and address that. But for them, language is really critical. I mean, cultural capital is driven by a richness of language, a richness of vocabulary, many ways of describing words, an ability to articulate ideas. Because in order to think, you have to be able to speak. And speaking is also about listening. It's about understanding body language. It's about nuance. It's about a range of vocabulary. So for me, that's really, really critical and really important. And so that's the second thing that's important. And the third thing is physical development. So children having access to a garden, to risky play, to expand their confidence. And for some parents, they live in very small flats or they haven't got access to this. So these are very important things that you can do in a nursery that may help parents to create, you know, future citizens.
So on the show tonight, we wanted to talk to you about global citizens. And I'd really love to know, what do you mean by a global citizen?
So we have been really exploring sustainability at a lot of level, actually, because when you work with small children, you're creating them for a global world. I mean, our world is very interconnected now, and so you have to prepare them for that. So when we think about global citizens, we're thinking about children who will be dealing with the unknown. We don't know how it'll be. They're also going to be responsible for how the globe and the world is going to sustain, because we're not doing a good job about that at the moment. And so we need to prepare them, and as much as we can, to understand their responsibilities, I think, to make decisions that are sustainable and are less likely to destroy the planet. So for us, for example, sustainability has got three pillars. It's economic, it's social, and it's environmental. And the decisions we make in those areas is what then causes the climate change that our children will have to address. So by teaching them to make better decisions in the three areas from the time they're tiny, we're hoping that we create a mindset that makes them more aware of their responsibilities to look after the world that they're going to live in. And, you know, in doing that, maybe get the staff thinking the same way, getting the parents thinking the same way, so that we make as many good decisions as we possibly can that might mitigate some of the climate change consequences that we're seeing at the moment.
I bet there are parents listening now going, seriously, you need to be talking to children about the consequences of these different three categories already in the early years. So what do you say to those parents who are going, seriously?
So the parents who are worried or who are surprised that we should be talking about big issues like sustainability with small children, this for me, and I currently doing a PhD on this very subject, is it's really about mindset change and starting with the youngest children. And, you know, it's their world that they're going to inherit, and we need to make some adjustments. So we talk about it in terms of LOP, leadership, operations and pedagogy. So the leadership would be things like making decisions about who we use for utilities, how we decide on the materials we use when we're refurbishing a nursery, how we create gardens that are sustainability focused in that they've got many more plants that are going to encourage cross-pollination, etc. Social, like how are we connecting with our community? How are we building that kind of sense of inclusion? So for like our children are involved with the local elderly home, they're involved in local arts, they're involved in, you know, buying from local charity shops, they're involved in growing activities in the local neighborhood. So social is really about understanding you're not on your own, but you have got responsibilities to other people around you. And these are very simple ways of doing it. And then environmental is really about the choices you make around things like what you purchase. So like, for example, we work with a company like Green Bottoms, which makes nappies that are completely biodegradable, because, you know, nappies, like 8 million nappies, I think it's a day at this point, are adding to the landfill. We work with companies like Fashion Enter, which is a small social enterprise that uses end of roll fabric, because, you know, fast fashion is really, really bad for the environment. So this would otherwise be thrown into landfill, but we make all our sheets from it and the children's aprons for when they're serving lunch. We've trained all our chefs to understand about nutrition and food portion size, so we've reduced food waste. I mean, food waste is incredible. In the UK alone, we can fill Wembley Stadium 8 times with the amount of food we waste. You know, so it's things like that that then start to shift the mindset. And the children are amazing because they say things like, turn the taps off, don't waste the water, put the lights out. You know, if you're not in the room, turn the lights off. Things like that are really important. And then so activities made from the recyclable materials that they've come in, you know, using cardboard, using, you know, toilet tubes, toilet paper tubes to make all sorts of interesting things. We use the lids of the milk bottle to do fishing lids. We cut the milk bottle sort of plastic containers. We try and have glass, by the way, but where we're stuck with those, we fill them with earth, we grow plants in them, we hang them on the fences. If you cut the top in this particular way, they become watering cans. So again, children are actually then learning about the garden. They're learning about how things grow. They love to grow cress so they can have it in their sandwiches. They grow their tomatoes. They grow their herbs. All of those things, they begin to connect. Then they begin to realize we must look after the insects. We have wormeries in the gardens. You have compost. There are hundreds of ways you can do this that just set a pattern of behavior that make people realize that, you know, decisions you make actually can impact. But it's also about creating a mindset change. And a lot of parents often think, oh, it's just, subject is just too big. It's too big. I can't cope with it. Well, one small decision is enough to start. You know, it's like a baby, you know, one small step is, takes you to a greater pathway. You can technically change the world, well, literally one child at a time.
Several light bulbs went on listening to you speak there, June. It was really, really interesting because the way you're kind of weaving in sustainability into mainstream nurseries is unbelievable, because I think in a lot of parents' heads, if you want that kind of global citizen thinking through the consequence for the planet, sustainability, you generally think you have to send your child to a forest school. But what you're doing is you're weaving it into everyday life for children throughout London, which is absolutely brilliant. And I really am so grateful to you for kind of raising awareness of those kind of issues. Do you see the difference in the early years children when they're given that kind of responsibility and you sow the seeds of sustainability and consequences in their little minds?
I certainly do. And it's also been really helpful for parents as well, who have, like, a bit like yourself, you know, going, oh my gosh, I had no idea we could influence this. I had no idea some of my decisions were going to cause this, because people don't really understand what sustainability and climate change is. I don't think they realize that the decisions they make there is what is like contributing to this. I know there are skeptics out there who say there is no such thing. And if you look at patterns of weather and stuff over the over the decades, well over, you know, beyond the decades, that you'll see that there are patterns of this back in you know, in other sort of times. But I don't know. I think it's not a risk I'm prepared to take. You know what I mean? I think if we can make minor decisions to do things, then we should. Also, there's a whole range of really lovely books that you can have for the children. Like there's some really great authors like Sarah Roberts, you know, who talks about, you know, the plastic in the ocean, but does it in a really clever way. And there's lots and lots of things like that. In fact, one of my colleagues and I wrote a book of 50 activities for sustainability just to help other nurseries to kind of start thinking about simple ways of doing things. Because I think often what people think is sustainability is such a big issue, you can't step into it. But as I say, you know, small decisions make a big difference. And so parents have become very alert to things, like particularly things like, you know, how much plastic bags are wasted when you collect your dirty nappies or dirty clothes. You know, children are always getting wet and muddy, and you know, now we use the recycle bags much more. They bring in the bag, we use it. You know, as I said, we use end of rolls to make also our tote bags. So then they're got home and they're washed. When you're using, like, you suddenly become an expert on things like greenwashing. So, you know, a lot of people package things beautifully in green and use language like biodegradable and compostable and stuff. But when you look at the back, you realize only a proportion of that is that way. So it's not truly biodegradable. There is plastic in the product. And I think we're educating a lot, certainly the staff are being much more educated on that, because they began to realize that what they assumed was language being used in the marketing of products isn't entirely truthful. And so I think also they were very motivated by the greenwashing, especially our younger staff, who are also going to carry the weight of this situation, to actually become much more informed, because they wanted to make better decisions as well themselves. And like I was talking to some of them, our apprentices in particular, and they've changed the way they buy makeup, they've reduced their purchase of cheap fashion, they've recognized about things like, you know, do you really need to be buying avocados if it's going to cause the farmers in Chile to be have, you know, a shortage of water and cause poverty for them? Do we need to really be having almond milk when we know it creates monoculture farming in California? You know, and also, you know, there's huge fads. You always notice a fad when you work with small children about what the latest fad is. And a lot of the vegan stuff is very processed as well. And so vegan food for small children is quite complicated because of the balance of nutrition. So we always offer a vegetarian, but like more and more nurseries are doing, say, 2 vegetarian meals a week to reduce meat. And that is something people are thinking about, because a lot of parents didn't realize they could provide very healthy vegetarian options for their children and not worry about their nutritional balance. And we have a chef academy called the Early Year Chef Academy, and our chefs are very well trained on this now, and they are very informative for parents. Parents really are interested in their thinking about this, and we give them menus and show them examples of this, because like a lot of parents will say, they'd never eat that for me at home. So we give them this, their menus that are working well. Or if they don't eat that for them at home, don't worry, they're eating it for us in the nursery, so they're getting a balance. So even those kind of decisions, and then choosing to use like, for example, we only use organic milk because we can kind of track where that's come from, and it's going to reduce the amount of chemicals that are put in that particular product. So, you know, there's all sorts of things that you can do once you start to realize that, A, you have the power to make the change, and B, the changes you make, small as they are, actually create a ripple effect. Because we're one nursery group. We've influenced loads of nursery groups, done lots of webinars with them. And so all them, they are all making changes. There's 1.5 million children in the nursery sector in the UK. So that's a lot of children. And then you think about that, a lot of parents. Then the parents have chats with their friends. Their friends have chats with their friends. You talk to the grandparents. They want to talk to other people. And before you know it, you have a ripple effect. So actually, what feels like a ridiculous thing to be thinking about, babies and sustainability, actually creates a national conversation that then makes people change some of their patterns and decisions. And you soon find that the companies, big businesses and their marketing teams will start to listen. And so that's why you also get more of this kind of greenwashing, because they realize parents are worried about things and they don't want to leave a legacy for their children of a really difficult world that they have to inhabit. So it's for people who are like worried about, well, what can I do? Just do one thing and it makes a difference. Just have one conversation with someone and it makes a difference. Just get someone thinking and maybe it'll take them a while, but you know, after a while, maybe they will start to change their behaviors and they will start to think. And then show them some of the images of the garbage patch in the ocean, or the size of landfill, or the impact, you know, some decisions you've made will have about how long it takes for something to biodegrade, if ever, and the consequences that has on your child. And I think soon that starts to weave a different approach and makes people much more alert to their responsibility.
Brilliant, June. That's so, so helpful. Now, fortunately, we have to wrap up this conversation. But if parents want to hear more from you, June, and how can they keep on top of the kind of conversations you're having with parents?
Well, if they Google me, they'll find my books on Amazon, and they'll find, if they go on the Leaf website, even though they're, you know, they're not London based or they're not attending any of our nurseries, they can access a lot of stuff on that for free. Sustainability stuff as well in particular. But also they can go and start having that conversation in their own settings and talk about the work we're doing. We're very happy. We're a social enterprise. One of the things about a social enterprise is you want to share your learning. You know, and they can ask questions of their own settings or of their own schools, like, what are you doing about this? How are you helping? How can I help you to help my children? So I think it's a question of having, like, starting a national conversation around sustainability and not being afraid to think about this when your children are like 2 weeks old, because they're the ones that are going to inherit this. And so we have to help them become the global citizens of the world that makes better decisions than some of the decisions we've made in the last 20 years.
June O'Sullivan, thank you so much for joining us on The Parents Show.
The Parents Show on Mix 92.6, sponsored by Raiden Solicitors, award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.